family. We all help each other. Tonight's speaker comes from the Adamsville group. I've known Tom quite some time, and he's helped me a lot along the way, a whole lot along the way. He was one of those guys that would come pick me up, and I don't know if he knew it or not, doing things for me he might not have even known. That might not have been helped at the time, but I look back on that as, you know, Tom's one of those guys that has just stuck around and done the deal, and shows and he shares the meetings, and I know him personally. So, without further ado, let me welcome Tom from Adamsville.
Hi, I'm Tom. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tom.
And today, that's okay. Now, I guess y'all all know, most of you know, that me and Michael stole that from Buddy Hayes out in Adamsville. You know, he's gone on to a big meeting in the sky. But for a long time, I was afraid to use that term, and as much as I loved it. Because I know Buddy Hayes. Yeah. Then it hit me one day, you know, a moment of clarification. Why should I let that phrase die with him? Yeah, when I talk it, I'm just passing on what he taught me. That's all we ever do here. My sobriety date, July the 7th, 2003. And that's a wonderful day. I remember the Adamsville group, and they got me sober, although I started this program according to 12 steps in January 1999. I'm one of those slow learners, I guess you could say. But today, that's okay. It does not matter how long it took. He's like, well, I just worked at it harder. Well, I got more experience. Oh, well, I got it better. I'm always self-centered from the very core, from the very start. And I was going to do a lot of reading out of the big book because I just had to pick one up because I wanted to figure out what I'm supposed to share. Yeah. Oh, it tells me something about that. What I was like, what happened, what it's like now. So what it was like, well, I started drinking my first time when I was 13. Had about 3 shots of good whiskey and a college mixer at a party. And I really liked that. I enjoyed that. It just set me free. And the next night, I went out and got beer, and I drank as much as I could, as fast as I could, and that's the only way I drank from then on. There was no other way. I didn't like the taste of it. I wanted to get drunk. See? And no matter what was happening, if I was feeling sad and I drank a little bit, well, I felt worse. If I was happy, I drank a little bit, and I was just floating on the clouds. But if I drank enough, something would click. And nothing would matter. You didn't matter. Situations didn't matter. Nothing mattered once I got just enough. And I usually started puking about a half hour before I got enough. Yeah. And I'd have to force it down. That stuff was poison to me. But it didn't matter. I knew what it would do for me, and that's what I had to have. I had to have my fix. Well, I realized when I was 16 that I couldn't drink like normal people. Yeah. And then I better quit. And I met a lady that she had heard a lot of bad things about me. Actually, I met her daughter, then I met the mother, and the mother kind of gave me a new lease on life when I was 16. See, I asked the daughter out, and this girl had never been out on a date before. And the neighbors heard about me asking her out, so they called her mother up and told her about me. So next time I go to their house, the mother called me up in the hallway and said, so-and-so called and so-and-so called, and they said this and that, you know. Said, but you've been a perfect gentleman around here, and I could act like a, you know, I had some good upbringing. I could act good. I knew I'd act it. And she said, but you've been a perfect gentleman around here, and I trust you, the most precious thing in my life. And I said, you know, she trusted me. Hey, nobody said that to me in a long time. You know, judges never said that. Yeah, juvenile court never said that. Nobody ever said that to me. They just locked me up, that's all. So there it was. At the bottom of it, you know, I said, I'm not going to drink. And I quit drinking. And to prove I wasn't an alcoholic, I didn't drink for 2 years. You know, until we got engaged. Until I had what I wanted. The girl. You know, what's going to fix me? Been trying to fix me all my life. But I'd end up drinking again and go right back to drinking just like I always did. Much as I could, as fast as I could. But, you know, a little bit of that, I said, oh, I can't drink. And I told friends a long time, you know, I don't drink. That's what I tell them, you know. And the ones that saw me drink, the first time they see me, going to pick up some, you know, somebody try to pass me, goes, oh, he don't drink. Oh, God, don't let him do that. They knew. The ones that knew, you know, oh, he don't drink. What they all didn't know is I couldn't drink like a normal person. Did not work for me. One was not enough. Yeah. 100 was not enough, and one was too many because I was going to go on. I don't want to stay in that past too long. It usually ends up being a pity party. Yeah. Because I got all the excuses anybody ever wants to drink. See? I went to therapy. That's all we did. We talked about all my excuses for drinking. And the truth is, I had no more idea why I drank than any man in the moon. I drank because I liked the effect it had on me. So I quit drinking again and decided, well, maybe with drugs would be better. So we tried a little drugs, you know. And then that helped for a long time. You know, a long time without having to drink. For the drugs. But sooner or later, the drinking came back. So then I was drinking and drugging. Then I quit the drugs. So I could quit drinking. Drugs just kind of went away, just lost interest in them. But not after drinking. Yeah. Everybody I knew drank. Just natural way. And I didn't want to be an alcoholic. My dad was an alcoholic. And I can say that because he all saved his life. And I was at my first AA meeting, listening to him give his story when I was 14 years old. Yeah. And I'd lived through some bad times prior to that with him. So I had my mind made up that, well, I was not going to be an alcoholic. Anything in the world, I wasn't going to be an alcoholic like him, you know. And I had no little idea that I already was. I just hadn't drank enough yet to know it. So I tried moving around. I was living in Florida in my car for 9 years, and I said, I think I'll move back to Alabama, Birmingham, get around the family, you know, and I might tell one of my uncles, you know, what kind of problems I'm having, you know, and fess up, and then that way I'll have the strength not to drink no more if I just get honest with somebody. And so I moved back to Alabama and quit drinking for 2 weeks. And I couldn't tell my uncle about it till I'd been dry for 2 weeks. You know, I had some kind of, my ego wouldn't let me tell him when I was drinking. I had to have, you know, show him that I hadn't drank for 2 weeks. And so 2 weeks without drinking, I'm going to go tell him. I said, wait a minute, maybe I'll stop and have a beer on the way. So then we got to go, you know. So I drank for 6 months, and all right, I'm going to go 2 weeks without drinking, then go 10 months. And this went on for 8 years, you know. Just quit for 2 weeks. I'm going to tell you, wait, one more time. One more drunk before I quit. I'm going to have fun one more time. And Eddie quit being fun a long time before that. Yeah. You ever drank and you wasn't having fun? Oh, really? You must be alcoholic. There's your sign. So I started working this program in a way. And trying to do it my way, of course, I just couldn't get it. So one morning, I'd had to, well, how am I going to tell this story? I tell a story different every time. I'm glad my father's not here. He won't know. After about 3.5-4 years in the program, or working these 12 steps, I don't want to say the program, I'm not naming the program I was working. I was going to meetings. I was going to quite a few meetings, 3 or 4 a week, And I thought that was something, Man, I was too busy to go more than that, I had things to do. I got, people to see and friends to talk to. I can't, go to meetings. 3 or 4 meetings a week, I was really knocking out meetings then. I thought, man, I'm really working this thing. And it wasn't working, of course. And I kept hearing about this God thing, and I went to a meeting over in a big book study. And like I said, I've been seeing a therapist this whole time. He keeps telling me to read the big book. I'm going to meet, they said, read the big book. And I read the daggum big book. I read all them other books you tell me about. And I reread the big book. Okay, I know the big book by heart now. I read it twice. So I tried to hold on to our old ideas, huh? So I went to big book study. And all of a sudden, they said, all right, tonight we're on page 69, more about sex. I said, oh, but they're lucky I'm here. I can tell them about this. Me and my therapist spent a lot of time on this, So they went around, and I said my little spiel, and they went around the table, and all of a sudden this one lady, she starts talking about, at the end of the day, I asked God to show me where I've been selfish, where I've harmed others, and, I didn't realize she was reading this out of the book. I thought she was saying she talked to God like that. Well, it'd be nice if I could talk to God like that. And I thought, hey, Lord, if I create my own God, maybe I could. So I had this aversion against God. I've been to church, and I was raised in a church like most of y'all, or a lot of y'all, or maybe a few of y'all, I don't know. So I thought, that'd be a great idea if I just make up my own God, and then I could just talk to him like a friend. That really sounds neat. I think that'd be great. And my next thought was, you can't do that, silly. That's a stupid idea. The next time I was talking to my therapist, I told him about that. He said, well, that sounds like a good idea. Why don't you do that? I said, you can't create God. God's God. He said, well, if you could, what would he be like? I said, I don't know. I guess he'd be absolute powerful, absolute love. He'd have to be absolute forgiving because of me, being like God. He said, what else? I said, well, I don't know. He said, why don't you work for that? I said, I can't believe I paid this guy good money for this kind of advice. So I left and didn't think no more about it. Somebody invited me to go to this church out in Leeds. It's a Tribes of Christ. They practice Native American spirituality. Not spirituality, but Native American practice of spirituality. But it was an Episcopal church. Whole just regular deal, they just use the drum, and it's kind of enchanting, I kind of like the idea, and they were nice people, and the rules were small, and all of a sudden a preacher got there, and he started preaching about this all-powerful, all-loving God. I said, that's the one I'm looking for. I might try this guy out, And the next week, I got there and got saved. Because I got drunk the week before. So I got saved. Man, I felt good. Man, that was almost as good as a six pack. I felt great. Man, I've done it. I run back to the group. Hey, I got saved. Man, it's all over. I've done it now. Look what I've done. And 3 weeks later, I was drinking again. So I got baptized in the Carver River. Look what I've done now. I've got it. Hallelujah, hallelujah. And 3 weeks later, I was gone. What was happening, the minute that feeling started getting normal, I wanted to get high again. I wanted my six-pack. I don't care how I got it. That's one reason I like drugs, and I did anything I could. See, well, I come to realize alcohol was but a symptom, just like it says in the big book. The problem was me. Selfish, self-centered, ego-driven. 100 forms of fear, self-pity, self-delusion. Oh, or whatever it says in the big book. Y'all read it. I don't need to read it to you. If you don't want to read it, good luck. Okay. So, what am I going to do now, you know? Well, I got real busy in this church. I was teaching Sunday school. I was in the praise and worship team. I started going to more meetings, too. I had a little turn. Well, actually, somebody introduced me to some of the speaker tapes. And I was listening to speaker tapes everywhere I went. I was going to 4 institutional meetings a week. Going to Anazaleti 3 times a week. Church hadn't leave, so I'd stop by an AA meeting on Sunday morning before I went to church. And church on Sundays, church on Monday night practice, Wednesday night sermon, Friday night practice. Yeah. Oh, I'm all over town now. I'm really doing this deal. You know, I'm really working this. I'm going to do it now. You know, I've got it. I'm going to get this. I'm going to get this. I'm going to do it. I'm going to. What's one word in there that screwed this whole thing up? It's always about me. Here I am trying to be the perfect program, 12-stepper, and all I can think about is what I'm going to do and how I'm going to do it and what I'm going to achieve. So we had a special deal on Saturday, confirmation of a priest. One of the ladies in the church had just got through and her studies and everything, and they had a ceremony, and they had people came up from Mobile, and they wore these big old tall hats and things, and little robes and everything. Always beautiful, you know, in this little church. And I played a special drum solo for her. She wanted to hear one of those Indian songs, and oh, it was just wonderful. And the next day, that was Saturday, on Sunday, I come to church, and that preacher started preaching, and he said, "Anybody having a problem?" Well, I've been drinking pretty regular, you know. But that baptism wore off, so I went up there, and he started preaching, you know. And this is one of those, when he preaches on, you know, putting his hands on somebody, they usually fall down, you know, pass out. So. And he's starting to do that to me. I wonder if that's going to happen to me. And all of a sudden, he starts pushing my head, you know. Like, well, he's going to knock me down, you know. Stop pushing back. I ain't going to go down. I ain't going to look stupid in front of all these people. And I'm pushing, you know. And he prays some more. Oh, move this demon from him. Whoa. And he pushed again. I pushed back, you know. And he finally did said, "You gotta help." And I said, "Oh no. Yeah. This whole thing of farce, what, you know." And he started praying some more, you know. And then he said, "Remove the demons. Remove the sexual perversion." I said, "Wait a minute." The back of my head, I've done a fist set with this guy. He's not supposed to tell that stuff. He's a man of the cloth. He's, you know, what is he gonna say next? And then he preached a little more, and he pushed, and I said, "I better fall down before he tells my story." Well, you know how it is, you know. They're used to it in this church. There's always, you know, somebody standing behind the people, guy getting preached over to catch them when they fall down. So I said, "Okay, I just fell backwards." And I fell, and I fell, and I realized they didn't sit down. They gave up. And I hit the floor like a ton of bricks. And I don't remember hitting the floor. I heard the noise, but I didn't feel it. See, something happened on the way down. I decided to follow stupid directions. I had surrendered a little bit. I had actually done something somebody suggested that I didn't think was should be done. And all of a sudden, I was bawling my eyes out, just crying. And I was remembering hateful things in the past and pains, and I was just crying and bawling. And this one guy was a firefighter. He had his hand on my chest. I guess he wanted to make sure I didn't, you know, die right there on the spot or something. And pastor, I don't know, after 4 or 5 hours, they said it was only 5 minutes, but it had to be 4 or 5 hours. I said, "You got to let it go." And I thought, "Let me let it go. Let it go." Okay. Yeah. And I think I saw something leave, you know. And that firefighter went like this. Just put it back. This may sound hokey to y'all, but it was real to me. Okay? It doesn't matter whether you believe it or not, it was real to me. something left. And I went, I couldn't wait to get back to meet and tell them what I'd done now. Oh, I felt good. It like I'd moonshine never worked so good. I was just, and every meeting I could go to. Hallelujah. And I went 6 weeks before I got drunk. How about that? It worked pretty good. Doing this, I decided that I was going to start doing some things the program told me, you know, like get up in the morning, say the third step prayer and surrender. So I was doing that every morning. And I would read some kind of meditation ahead of time or do some kind of meditation or sometimes just on the way out the door say, God help me. You know, do something, you know, every morning, like they told me. I found actually doing some of the things they told me. And this one morning, I got up. The dog was whining and needed to go outside, so we started to walk outside. And usually that's when I pray, on the way outside, or I stand outside with the stars and just enjoy the day. On the way outside, I started to cough. Just couldn't quit, you know. Oh, I got to come down with something. And I started thinking, well, I got to go to Walmart and I get to get expectorant cough syrup, you know. And I got to go to Walmart because it's cheaper there. Last time I bought that stuff, $12 a little bottle at the drugstore. I go to Walmart to get a big bottle. Yeah, that's what I need to do. And the Lord said, maybe you shouldn't go to Walmart. I said, oh, wait a minute. God, protect me when I go to Walmart. Fix it so I can go to Walmart. And that's all I did, and I went on. Went on to work. I didn't have time to stop on the way to work. So I left work. I'm going to Walmart. Now, while I was at work, two or three times, I was late, but I can't go to get that car truck, get this thing taken care of. Somebody said, well, we'll say, maybe you shouldn't go to Walmart. I said, wait a minute, God, protect me when I go to Walmart. I go to Walmart before I got out to God. You protect me when I go in there. Don't let me, do anything stupid. Don't let me get carried away with anything. I went in, I got the car truck, walked back out in my truck, and turned the bottle, got the big bottle. Turned it up, drank half of it. No, there's not a lot of alcohol in it. Yeah. But I don't know, I waited about 5 minutes, nothing happened, so I drank the rest of it. Now, I hadn't got drunk on alcohol since I was 14 years old. And I went or tried to drink cough syrup to yourself. I wasn't drunk, I wasn't feeling nothing, but it just seemed like the right thing to do at the time. I wanted to feel something. Not really trying to get drunk, I'm just trying to fix me, that's all. I am in control today. God's going to protect him because I told him to. I gave him my list and he's going to take care of it. And I'm not putting it too good. All of a sudden, two women drive up, park beside me, and they got these Martian ears on them. It's near Halloween, so I don't know. And they get out there laughing and joking. I say a little joke to them. When do we get back out? I'll wait around. I talked to them, and the talk didn't go like I wanted it or like they wanted it, one or the other. And they stormed out of there. I said, okay, I'll go. By the time I'm getting ready to back out, the police car pulls up behind me. That's him. That's the SOB. And he said, where are you going? He said, oh, we talked to these ladies, you've been acting inappropriately. And if they're going to go down and fill out charges, you're going to be arrested. Yes, sir, woman. No. All right, big deal. I said big deal, but I was really, big deal. I have a record, It's not going to be good for me. But I talked to a friend of mine and said, hey, something's going on. You meet me at the Waffle House. It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I hadn't ate anything all day. Don't get hungry, ain't lonely, tired. I don't listen to y'all. I know what I need. I'm back into my head. I'm back into my way of doing things. So I was left there. I went to Waffle House meeting. I sat in my truck. And the first thing I got into thinking, there's going to be some trouble here, This could get bad, Get my record, I could go to jail for a year for misdemeanor, if they've had a motion to. If that happens, I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to lose my truck. I'm so proud of. And heck, besides my truck, I'll lose the house. the family would be out on the street. Oh, pitiful me. Yeah. Blaming everybody. They started this. It's not my fault. You know, I act like that because of my past. The whole past comes roaring back up. All the stuff I've let go comes roaring back into my head. It's all their fault. All the pain, all the pity, all the stuff I've been over through the therapist. Everything's roaring back into my head, and I said, wait a minute. I'm working a program, you know. And I, not only after I felt that, believe me, I decided to forgive the past. My friends, whoever, strangers, enemies, friends, parents, whatever, don't forgive that. And I listened, and I did. And I didn't know how that I'd done it the right way until I found out later. How you really forgive. You don't forgive by saying it was okay or it wasn't so bad. You forgive more or less a four-step way. You see what it cost you. You add up the cost of what the wrong was. And then you say, the debt is paid. You check it off. Nobody owes me nothing for this anymore. It's over and done. And if it comes back up, don't refugiate the work you've done. It's just a memory. The debt's paid. Yeah, throw it back over in the paid file. So that's what I said. Right then I decided to do that. I said, yeah, okay. Well, I forgave that. I let that go. I don't want it back. I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back. I forgave it. It's done. Yeah. So the anger was nobody to blame then, you know. It's just me. And I said, then I turned to God. I said, well, okay. I said, look, whatever happens in this deal, if I lose everything, I'm okay with that. I just want it to be your will. Whatever your will is, let that be done. And all I want out of this is just let me learn what I need to learn out of this to help somebody else. And that's my thinking at the time. You know, I'm burnt. My whole life screwed up. I really, you know, again, I'm going to lose everything again. You know, and all I wanted was to be able to help somebody else. And that was the thought I had. And I realized that that's when I surrendered. That's when I finally got rid of me. Hallelujah. Yeah. Which is, and from that thought on, I started working the program. I actually started working the program. I got out of the truck after I said that, you know. I didn't feel any different. I didn't feel wonderful or nothing. You know. No great spiritual movement or nothing. I just got out, walked in the restaurant. 2 minutes later, my friend walked in, sat down, and how you feeling? I said, hey, I feel fine. It's okay. It's going to be okay. He said, what about all, you know, you're fine? I said, well, yeah, if that happens, it happens. I'll live through it. It's okay. I don't have, you know. And I couldn't believe I was saying that. And I couldn't believe I felt that. And I just felt at ease. I was not afraid. I was not mad. Just, you know, it's okay. I just had serenity about it. And right then I said, well, God must have did this. Yeah. And my thought then was that God must really love me. I can't believe it. That God I was looking for was there. And He really does love me. So then I started going back over and reading this book. It all had a different meaning. When it says, some of us try to hold on to our old ideas, it tells me to let go absolutely. Well, that's what I've done. I've let go of all my ideas absolutely. I turned over my will, whatever happened to me, to God. All my wants, everything that happens to me, God's deal. And it's, that's what happened, I guess you could say. Now, what it's like today, I don't have expectations hardly at all. I don't run around looking for what's going to make me happy. See? As long as things don't have to work out the way I want them to, then I can be happy about everything. That's what the program teaches me. It's simply how the program works. you turn your will and your life over to God. You don't care what happens anymore. It's God's deal. Then you can be happy with whatever happens. Instead of having to do what? I'm going to have to read it. I just can't say it. So. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we stepped on the toes of fellows and they retaliated. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation. We invariably find that at some time in the past we have made a decision based on self, which later placed in the position to be hurt. Our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. As an alcoholic, I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot, though I usually don't think so. Above everything, I had to be rid of this self-centeredness. I must, or it kills me. And God makes that possible. I guess that's what the key to this program is for me. It's when I got rid of me, God moved in. There was not room in my insides, in my thinking, for my self-centeredness and God's centeredness. They say an alcoholic has a decision to make when he comes to this room. Are you going to go your way of life, or are you going to go our way of life? If you're going to go your way of life, go right here. If you're going to go our way of life, then turn your will and your life, make the decision over to God, and then work the steps and do it. And that's all I've done. And I can't believe it took me this long to tell you all that. But nobody likes a long-winded talker, and I've told you, the only thing I know today is that God really does love me. And it's not the God of my grandma. It's not the God of the Cherokee Nation. It's not the God of anybody else. It's my God that loves me. It's the God of my understanding that I've never understood before. Thank you.